Hello and welcome to the Columbus Metropolitan Club on 90.5 WCBE. Founded in 1976 by 13 visionary women leaders in Columbus, Ohio, the Columbus Metropolitan Club connects people and ideas through community conversation. From its beginning, CMC has welcomed everyone. I'm Doug Buchanan, CMC's Vice President of Programming. You can learn more about CMC on our website, columbusmetroclub.org. Today's forum, Columbus Police Chief Elaine Bryant, was supported by the Columbus Dispatch. This forum was recorded before a live audience following COVID protocols at the Boathouse in Columbus, Ohio on October 6, 2021. After a nationwide search, Columbus Mayor Andrew J. Ginther announced the selection of Elaine Bryant as the city's new Chief of Police on June 2, 2021. Chief Bryant has made history as Columbus's first African-American female chief. Today's speakers are Elaine Bryant, Chief of Police for the City of Columbus, and our host, Kelly Lecker, Managing Editor with the Columbus Dispatch. Let's join the conversation.
There are a lot of firsts attached to your name when you came to Columbus. You're the first African-American female to ever lead this division, and you're the first police chief ever to be hired from outside the division. What does that mean to you?
Well, I think it's historical. I know that it is a heavy lift that I'm ready to do. It's been a pleasure to meet everyone in the city of Columbus, the residents, the community, the members. They've been so welcoming. So I'm excited to have this opportunity and be able to be a part of this reform of the police department.
As someone who came from outside of the city, do you feel like there are challenges you might not have had if you had come up the ranks in the Columbus Division of Police?
Oh, absolutely. You know, being an outsider, the first thing that you have to do is you have to gain the trust of not only the community, but you have to gain the trust of the members as well. So being an outsider and them not knowing anything about me or what I want to bring to the table or anything about my integrity, my work commitment, my ethics, I have to let everyone know what I'm about, be open and transparent, and gain their trust, not just the officers, but the community, the residents. So that, I think, is the biggest challenge, just being open and transparent and letting everybody know that I'm here for the right reasons.
Now, you have two sons, and I know your mom was at the announcement when you were announced as chief, right?
Yes.
How did they influence your decision to come here and your decision to lead a police division?
Well, my family is extremely supportive, and anyone that knows anything about me know that I am very family-oriented. So if I didn't have the support of my family, I would not be here. My sons are the world to me, and I have a 19 and a 21-year-old, and everything that I do, I try to be the biggest role model that I can for them and let them know that anything that you want to do in life, you should go for it and try to be the best that you can be. So my family, they're extremely influential in any decision that I make, and they have been extremely supportive during this entire process, so I would not be here without them.
Great. So you've been here less than 4 months, is that right?
Yes.
Brand new. You have gone around to different communities and neighborhoods and talked to residents. What did you learn?
I've learned quite a bit. First and foremost, I've learned that the residents are very open to working with the department. They want to fill that gap between the community and law enforcement. We understand that there is a disconnect, and we want to make sure that we're all on the same page because everyone has the same goals, which is to make this community safer. But they're also extremely fed up with the violence that is occurring in our city, something that we all share, a passion that we all share. We want to make sure that we do something about that. And they also are very supportive of their law enforcement officers, and they understand the work that they do and the commitment that they have coming out day in and day out, putting their lives on the line to make sure that the citizens are safe. But they also understand that there are some challenges within the department and that we need more resources. So they've been very supportive in that and in trying to figure out how they can help and what they can do. So everyone has been extremely open to sharing their ideals, and we welcome that. We want to continue to work with the community to make sure that we get their input in anything that we do to make it a success.
Let's talk about that violent crime for a minute. As of Monday, there were 163 homicides, which is pretty close to the record set last year of 175, and a third of those victims were under 25 years old. In addition, there were 1,209 felonious assaults. We wrote a story last week about some carjackings perpetrated by 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds. Can you put your finger on what is causing the spike in violent crime, particularly among young people?
Well, what I can tell you is, unfortunately, the spike in violent crime is occurring across the nation. When you look at the reports, it's like 30% across the entire nation. We understand that we have to be extremely vigilant about addressing our crime, but we also know that we can't arrest our way out of this situation. When you're dealing with youth, they not only make up a big percentage of the offenders, but they also make up a big percentage of the victims as well. So we have to figure out, how do we reach our youth and how do we address this? Because it's a big concern. One of the things that we know is, when you talk about the carjacking specifically, a 12-year-old out at 2 o'clock in the morning. Why is a 12-year-old out at 2 o'clock in the morning in a position to be able to carjack? And why is this not their first offense? So we need to figure out, as a community, it's not just a police issue, as a community, what we can do to address our youth and be able to make sure that we're giving them the tools and giving them the resources they need to grow up and be productive citizens. That's not going to be just about locking them up. But there are situations where that's going to be imminent. We have repeat offenders, 15, 16-year-olds that are on their fifth, sixth, seventh gun crime. We have to figure out what we can do to turn that around. Is that a community effort in regards to resources? Because what I did find is, when you go into some of these homes, there's drug addiction, there's extreme poverty, there's illiteracy, there's single mothers that are working three jobs that aren't even home to be able to address their youth or make sure that they're home because they're trying to keep food on the table. So we have to address all of that as a society. We can't just focus on locking up the child. We have to figure out what we can do to heal that entire family so that they can be able to be sustainable in these changes. You can work with a child, you can give them therapy, you can give them counseling, but if you're sending them back into that same toxic environment, what have you really done? So it's up to us, not just as law enforcement, but as a community, as residents, as other city entities, to come together and collectively figure out, how do we address our issues, socioeconomic issues in our community, as well as the crime. I think they go hand in hand. And once we figure that out, we'll be able to make some sustainable changes.
And what is the police division doing to work with social service agencies and pastors and other groups to help provide that support for our youth?
We're working on a lot of different programs that are going to be rolling out real soon. The department has done a really good job in working with a lot of different city entities to be able to do this, and we just want to be able to take it to the next level. One of the things that we want to do is create more youth programs, because as we talked about, we know how important that is, and we're not talking about high school, because sometimes by the time you get to high school, it's too late. So we're looking at the fifth, sixth, and seventh graders. We have to start young and be able to get into those schools, and we want to target the areas that that have the issues, whether it be poverty, whether it's behavioral issues, and we want to get to those children, create these programs, and be able to try to mentor them and get them to a place where they, by the time they get to high school, they have a positive outlook on their life. You'd be surprised how many children you talk to that will tell you they don't even expect to live past 21. If they don't care about their own lives, how can you expect them to care about yours? And that's just the reality. So we have to figure out a way to build their self-esteem, to build their confidence, to give them avenues to be able to go out, and whether it's a job through job training, whether it's college, whatever their road is, be able to help them get there. So there's youth programs that are going to be extremely important that we have to do. Part of that is reaching out to some of our business communities, because we're going to need their help, reaching out to some of our city services, because we're going to need their help, and reaching out to the community to be involved. We are in the process of beefing up our chaplain corps. They play a huge part in that. We want to make sure that we provide the services not only for the victims of these crimes, but for the officers. They see a lot. So we have to make sure that their mental health and their wellness is intact as well, because in order for them to be able to be sustainable and do their job and make sure they're in a good place, we have to take care of them as well. So it's all inclusive. We're looking at everyone to step up. So there's going to be a time where we're going to reach out to our community and we start rolling out our programs that we're going to ask for help. So I went to a lot of community meetings. I've been to a lot of business meetings, and they say, how can we help? Oh, it's coming. It's coming. So we're going to ask you now to, you know, be open to the ideas and possibilities, because it can't be done with just law enforcement alone. So it's going to take an effort, a group effort from everybody in this room, everybody that's listening. We are going to need your help.
There was a report that came out yesterday, I believe, that said that about 46% of the homicides last year were perpetrated by a very small group of people in the city. What's being done to target those most violent of offenders?
So when you look at, especially a city this large, the majority of our citizens and our residents, they're law-abiding. There is a small group of people that are driving our violent crimes. So it's important for us to focus on that and be data-driven and specific about how we deal with those particular people. We have different initiatives that we're rolling out. I know yesterday there was an announcement about some of our initiatives, specifically our gun violence intervention program. We have to make sure that we are looking at ways, not again just to arrest our way out of it, but there are other city services that have to be involved in it. When you look at the prosecutor, you have to look at our residents that are being able to offer the different programs, whether it's, again, job training. But we have to be very unified in our message. You're either going to accept the help and you're going to get on board with these services, or the alternative is you're going to have to go to jail and you're going to have to address the issues that you're dealing with, and we're not going to accept it in our community. So we're looking at different programs to be able to roll out to address those issues. And then, of course, there's always technology. We're looking at, you know, instituting a real-time crime center to be able to assist us in being able to focus specifically on the areas and the times that these crimes are being committed. We're looking at, we already have our ShotSpotter program that's already in place so that we know where the incidents are occurring so that we can allocate resources to be able to deal with that specifically. So there's a collective effort of things that we're trying to do to be able to address these crimes, and we're going to continue to evolve and continue to bring programs and resources to do that. We're changing the way that we do our crime strategy meetings. That's in the process right now, because what we noticed is it wasn't very specific to what you're talking about. So we're tailoring that to make sure that we are laser focus and addressing those issues and those concerns with that group of people, and they will be put on notice.
Now, I hear you talking a lot about working with the community and needing the community's help. Over the last couple of years, I've heard some police commanders and even the mayor say the same thing. We need the community's help. We need them to share information about crimes they see, and there's been some frustration expressed over time that hasn't happened. At the same time, many in the community say they've lost faith in the police division, that they, because of what they say is systemic bias against the Black community. They point to some actions during the George Floyd protests. They point to recent shootings, including Andre Hill and Micaiah Bryant. It seems from what we're talking about today that high crime and community trust go hand in hand. So how do you help reform the police department from within while at the same time gaining the trust of residents?
Great question. And that is an effort that has been underway even before I got here. That has been an effort that's been led by the city, by the mayor's office, by the director's office. And I think that's one of the main reasons that I am here and why I was picked and selected to be a part of this, because when you talk about changing, you have to look at a cultural change. And so when I look at the department, like I said, I've been going around, I've been meeting with a lot of officers, a lot of community members. We have some phenomenal officers on this department. But understand, we have some work to do. We have work to do. We have to diversify this department. This department needs to reflect the community in which it polices. So it's important that we do that. It's important that we make sure that our training is in par with 21st century policing, the best practices. We have to make sure that our officers are all trained in mental health. We have to make sure that they're all trained in crisis intervention. We have to make sure that they understand that when they go out and they represent the department, that whatever actions they take reflect not just the department, but this city as a whole. So we are in the process of looking at the organization overall. There are some changes that will be made. We are in our assessment phase. There will be some overhauls and some changes in regards to organizational accountability. There will be some overhaul and changes in regards to the way the resources are allocated that I think will be beneficial. And we're absolutely looking into our training program to make sure that we are in line with the best practices across the nation. So that's not just an internal thing. There are changes that we are doing inside of our division, but there are changes that are happening within the community as well. As you know, we have a civilian review board, Janet Jackson, our president right there. So they are instrumental in assisting and making sure that there's checks and balances with the department. We have a chief's advisory board. Our citizens are very active in helping us to determine what the needs of the community are and what their concerns are. They bring that to us, and we're very open and listening to make sure that we address that and implement that into anything that we're trying to do. We meet with our community members, I can't tell you, almost every other day. We're in some community talking to someone because we want to hear. We want to know what you have to say. We work with our director's office. Our new director, Director Clark, has been very helpful. Thank you, sir. Our mayor's office. So everybody has a hand in helping and trying to figure out what that looks like. So that internal change is happening. It may not be something that you see right away, but I think that over time you will see that that it will change and it will be a reflection on how the department not only looks. We're looking to increase our diversity. We're looking to increase our women on the department. We're looking to increase diversity within the ranks as well. So as we move along, and it won't happen overnight. Just understand it is a process. So I ask that people be patient and understand that if you're looking for it to happen overnight, that's not going to happen. So be patient with us and understand that we are moving in that right direction. And it's not just me or Assistant Chief Potts who's sitting over there who's been extremely instrumental in helping with everything that's going on, but it's an entire community that's moving forward and pushing and driving that change.
Do you believe in defunding the police to make room for some of the social service programs you talked about?
I don't think that defunding the police is the right answer. And to be quite honest, when you look across the nation and when you look at our department, we need more personnel and to be able to do some of the things that we're trying to do. However, there are services that are extremely instrumental in being able to help that don't always require the response of the police, which we have a program called the Alternative Response. So there are times when police aren't necessary. There are times where it would be more beneficial to have social worker, mental health workers, and we're looking at that. But there are times, more often than not, then you need the police. And you want them to be there. And so we have to make sure that it's not about defunding them. It's about making sure that they are doing the things that they're supposed to do, that they're trained properly. And officers aren't just about, they're not just an arm of enforcement. They are community service. So we have to utilize them in the manner that's going to be beneficial, not only to the department, not only about enforcement, but also about building and bridging those gaps between the community and law enforcement. Because it does need to change in some ways, because we know, especially over the past year and a half, things have been extremely different, and it has been stressful not only on the community, but law enforcement entities as well. So we know that we need to operate different, but I think defunding is not the answer. The answer is reforming and changing the way we operate.
And have you communicated a lot of your ideas of change to the rank and file in the Columbus Division of Police, and how did they react to it?
Assistant Chief Potts, and a couple of other exec team, we speak to the rank and file. I've been trying to make every single roll call. Still in the process of doing that. I have open door policy. They can come and talk to me. The majority of officers are excited about change. They want to change. They want the department to move forward and heal and have the great relationship with the community. So they're ready. They're ready for that heavy lift. The majority of them understand and the role. They understand the changes. And a lot of them are really community-oriented. They just don't really know how to go about it. So that's our job as management, as executive team, to lead that charge and make it comfortable and give them the training and the tools necessary to be able to go out and do the work. And I just will be quite honest with you. There are a couple people that aren't open to change. And to those people, there's always an option. You can go because the department is going to move forward and we're going to have that great relationship with the community and we're going to fight crime collectively and together. So to the people that don't want change, the only thing that I can tell you is that it's coming and this department is going to move forward. So, but the majority of officers, they do want it.
And you've had, in your time with the Detroit Police, I think I read that you worked with citizen complaints for a time. Is that right?
Yes.
What did you learn that you brought here?
So I was at the Office of the Chief Investigator for a couple of years and had an opportunity to work closely with the Board of Police Commissioners, which is equivalent to the Civilian Review Board. And I found that that checks and balance is good. A lot of people are against it, but I don't think that they necessarily understand how important it is to be able to have an outside entity be able to come in, because most times people are thinking about it in terms of, oh, they're there to hang an officer up or they're there to show that someone did something wrong. But it oftentimes, it's quite the opposite. A lot of times it shows that they did it right or that there wasn't anything wrong. So that checks and balances there. And if an officer does something wrong and if an officer is violating rights, we need to know that because we want to hold them accountable. That's not what we're about. We want professionalism, and we want our officers to remember that code of ethics that they took when they signed on to be law enforcement. So it's important for that civilian review board to be there to be able to say, okay, we've had an opportunity to look at these policies. We've had an opportunity to review these complaints, and either, yes, this officer is going down this road where they need some sort of discipline or some sort of re-instruction, or no, this officer didn't do anything wrong, and this is what we found. So I think that it's extremely important, and during my time there, I learned a lot. So I think that being able to have that background and understand and know how it's supposed to work is going to be beneficial for me to be able to work with them and be able to make sure that they have everything they need to do their job.
And how much authority do you think the Civilian Review Board should have over the division?
Well, at this point, I know it's a work in progress. They're new, so we're still learning and trying to figure that out. I know that they're still in the process of getting their entire team together. So I think that those things will be worked out as we go along and as we look and see.
So what would you say to a young Elaine Bryant, a young black woman looking to start on a thinking about becoming a police officer? What would you say to them about the state of policing today?
I would say to a young me, if you're interested in this job, just make sure you understand that this job is about public service. Make sure you understand that this job is not going to always bring sunny days. There are going to be times where you're going to get frustrated, you're going to be upset, but that if you are the type of person that loves helping people and you're committed to that, then do not let anything stop you from being a part of this organization. The one thing that I know coming on this job was that I didn't even know I wanted to be the police. I was just being honest with you. I stumbled upon this job actually on a bet. Someone told me that I couldn't do it, and I told them, I bet I can. That's how it started for me. And I was one of those kids. I was working in the healthcare field. I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I started the police department on a bet, and I will tell you, from the moment that I walked through the doors, I knew that I found my home away from home, and I knew that this was exactly where I was supposed to be.
You're listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club on 90.5 WCBE. Today's forum is Columbus Police Chief Elaine Bryant. Speaking are Elaine Bryant, Chief of Police for the City of Columbus, and our host, Kelly Lecker, managing editor with the Columbus Dispatch. We'll return to the conversation after a short break.
The 2021 Fall Fund Drive is in the books, and all of us at WCBE couldn't be more appreciative of the financial support received from you, our members. Our survival depends on you, and many of you stepped up to ensure WCBE continues as a strong community partner. And if you missed the fund drive, please consider making a contribution at wcbe.org. Again, to all our listeners, members, and supporters, a sincere thank you from your favorite public radio station, WCBE.
City leaders are trying out new solutions to solve Columbus's policing problems. But will they work to make our community safer? In a new podcast series, The Future of Policing in Columbus, we will track those solutions and others from around the country, interviewing community members, experts, politicians, researchers, and law enforcement professionals. Produced by matternews.org, hosted by Edie Driscoll. Find us at wcbe.org, podcast experience, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum. Columbus Police Chief Elaine Bryant. Speaking are Elaine Bryant, Chief of Police for the City of Columbus, and our host, Kelly Lecker, Managing Editor with the Columbus Dispatch. Let's get back to the conversation.
So for me, being in law enforcement, and especially being in this role as a chief of police, it's about public service. And every decision that I make and everything that I do is I try to do the right things for the right reasons, and I try to make sure that I'm looking at how it's going to affect the community, law enforcement as a whole, and I try to make changes that are sustainable and not just about that fleeting moment. So I would say to that young officer, buckle up. If this is the ride you want, and understand there are going to be turbulences, ups and downs, but if you're committed to it, it is rewarding and it is satisfying.
And you've had quite a ride to get to where you are right now. You were telling me at lunch about your first day. Can you talk about your first day here?
First day, unfortunately, Mackenzie Ridley was my first day. The 17-year-old young lady that lost her life, she was just out trying to enjoy her summer with her friends at a water gun fight, and her life was taken. It was shot down, and she literally was on her way to college. She should be right now at Wilberforce College, but she's not. That was day one. I hadn't even had a chance to turn a computer on. I hadn't had a chance to do anything. I was standing in front of the press, and I was speaking about her tragic loss of life and what we could do to try to prevent this and what we're going to do. And day one. So for me, it was a very humbling experience, because on a day where I should have been excited, you know, and gung-ho about a job, I was actually very saddened, and it was very tragic for me. But even then, even with all that, I knew that I was here, and I knew that there was a reason I was here, and I was in the right place at the right time.
And what have you learned since then? What surprised you about the division?
Surprised me about the division? I don't know if it would necessarily be a surprise, but I've learned a lot about the division. I've learned that we have some great men and women. I've learned that there's a lot of work to do. I've learned that we need to have some organizational overview of some areas. But I also learned that I believe that we can do anything and it's possible with this department, because we have all the support between city entities, between residents. I think that it is absolutely the time to move forward and be able to take this division to the next level and make this one of the greatest divisions, safest cities that we can have. It's absolutely doable, and we're going to do it.
What is your relationship with the police union? Have you talked to them a lot about these changes, and how are you working with them to enact the changes within the division?
I have an amicable relationship with the unions. I'm in constant contact with them because it's all about communication. We're not going to always agree, but we can do that respectfully, and we can try to work through the things that we don't agree about. But so far, it has been a very amicable relationship, and there are some things that we've been able to work together to make changes on.
And what about the mayor's office? Everybody from the mayor's office can just cover your ears for a second.
No, actually, the mayor's office has been great. We work together. They've been very supportive of me being here, and they've been very supportive of the changes that we're trying to do. So I have nothing but great things to say about the mayor's office as well as the director's office.
And if you had to look at this department, and you're going through so much change, we had this session 5 years from now, how would you want to describe the department?
5 years from now? I would want to say, look what we've done in 5 years. We've increased diversity. We've increased our technology. We have a phenomenal real-time crime center. We have an expansive team of community members that are helping and assisting us. Our Citizens Police Academy is extremely instrumental in assisting us with addressing our crime issues. We have radio patrol. Our chaplain corps is 100-plus members. These are the things I want to be able to say in 5 years. And our crime. Our crime has significantly decreased, and we have one of the safest cities in America.
So we're going to move to questions from our live stream and the audience in just a few minutes. So if you have a question, please make your way to the microphone now. And before we take the questions, just one last question. How would you define a safe city? What are your metrics for that?
I define a safe city by a couple things. First and foremost, a really low number of violent crimes, but not just violent crimes, because one of the things that when I talk to community members, quality of life crimes are an issue. You should be able to sit on your porch and not be worried about anyone accosting you. You should be able to have your children ride their bikes down the street and not worry about a drag racer running them over. You should be able to walk to the corner store without worrying about stray bullets. So it's inclusive of not just violent crimes, but all crimes, and it's inclusive of community engagement. So when you have your residents extremely involved, like I said, whether it's radio patrol, community block clubs, and when you have the officers that are engaged with citizens, and not just because they got calls for service, but because they're proactive and being able to have those conversations without it being a situation where they were called to a home under duress, I think that that all qualifies for having a safe city.
It is CMC's longstanding tradition to take audience questions. Jane Scott of CMC is curating questions from the live stream audience. Anybody who's in the room can make their way to the microphone. And please keep your questions brief and to the point. Jane, are there any first questions from the virtual audience?
There are a lot of questions, and we'll do every other one, so don't be discouraged if you get up here. And I apologize, I'm going to butcher this name. Lalitha Pamdiganton, what does the chief say to reports that reflect that more diversity doesn't actually reduce violent police murders of civilians?
I would say that the more diversity piece is not just about reducing those numbers, although that is extremely important to us. It's about several things. It's about, again, having the police department reflect the community in which it polices. It's about being able to have a different perspective. A lot of times when I was in Detroit, one of the things that we used to always try to do was pair up officers that weren't alike, because you want to have either a male or a female, or a black officer, a white officer, because when you go to a lot of these runs, you have different perspectives and you have different thought processes that you can get from having different officers respond to those runs. So what we want to do is create that diversity so that we have a department that is reflective of everyone. So I think that it will actually assist in self-checking a lot of officers, because sometimes when you have a group of officers that are just alike, they don't have the ability to be able to see other perspectives. So it is important.
Hi, I'm Carol Looper. Within the past week, two narcotics officers were arrested for dealing drugs, two tenure officers. Before you got here, the vice squad was disbanded because of some actions of vice officers. Has this latest arrest given a black eye to the police department, and what are you going to do?
Of course, this latest arrest is not good. It's one of those things where we are extremely disappointed. We are embarrassed about what has occurred. But what I will tell you is that we are in the process of, again, like I said, looking at the department as a whole and looking at specific entities and looking at audits. There are internal audits that are going on. And I just want to be clear. There are times that a lot of officers that have received discipline or been fired for things, they have been internally reported, meaning that other officers have said, listen, these are things that are going on in our department, and we don't like it because it gives a bad reflection for the police department. So a lot of officers have been terminated or found to have discipline based on other officers reporting them. So there are a lot of good officers that are on the department that don't want this negative attention, and they don't want to have officers in their department doing the things that they're doing as well. So it is an embarrassment, and anytime that we find officers that are doing wrong, we want to hold them accountable. So if these allegations are proven to be true, we will hold every single person accountable for anything that they are found to do that are not within the standards of this division, period.
Wonderful. Taylor Slovak has this question. If the department isn't looking to reallocate funding to ensure that we can fund the social programs and resources mentioned to reduce crime and improve quality of life, where should it come from?
I think that that is a question that we have to sit down and look at across the board. I'm not saying that these social programs shouldn't exist. I'm just simply saying that we have to make sure that we put first and foremost the safety of our residents, and we have to make sure that we are looking at it across the board as a whole. Because even in situations where, even in an alternative response, if say we send a social worker to a particular residence, it could turn just like that into something completely different. So we have to ensure that we're putting the safety of our residents as a priority as well. So that's something that we have to look at as a whole to try to figure out where it comes from. But we have to make sure that the safety of our residents is as a priority as well.
Thank you, Chief. Greg Zunkowitz, former board member of Kaleidoscope, active supporter of the organization. I think a lot of people in the community think that there is a problem of allocation of resources, myself included. Could you specifically address, we heard some general plans in your opening comments, specifically address an allocation of resources and programs to queer and at-risk youth, specifically ages 12 to 20. Thank you.
Thank you. So, yeah, we're looking, same thing with the programs. We want to create youth programs. We haven't had an opportunity to sit down with every community group. We're still in the process of doing that. So we want to have input and feedback from the residents that it's going to affect, the community that it's going to affect, to make sure that we're putting the proper programs in place that are going to be sustainable. And we're going to need the assistance of that community as well. So we haven't had an opportunity to do that yet. We're still in the assessment phase, 3.5 months in. And so we're working on it, but it's coming.
There are several questions about working with other police departments, the suburban police departments, and there's also Steve Swift asks, what's being done to improve officer recruitment and training to ensure that officers are qualified and absolutely ready to take on the role from day one and as they move forward with their profession? And Taylor Slovak has a similar, what reforms would you like to implement at the academy?
So we're looking at that as well. The recruitment piece is a huge thing. We want to make sure that our officers are properly trained and well-trained. We have training now at the academy that we think is good, but we also know that there's more training and different training that we can implement that's going to assist them in being able to go out and do their jobs more efficiently, more effectively. We absolutely want to increase our mental health training. We want to increase our crisis intervention training. We want to increase our de-escalation training. We want to make sure that our officers have all the tools necessary to know that when they go out and when they find themselves in a situation, we want them to be able to de-escalate it, whether it's through verbal interaction, whether it's through, you know, bringing other resources to the table that may be able to do that. So we're looking at all that, and we're also looking at our recruitment team. And we've just recently added an addition to that recruitment team because we want to beef up our ability to go out and reach different community groups to be able to draw from a different perspective. We're looking to actually recruit within Columbus. We want a lot of our residents to be a part of this police department, so we're beefing up that effort as well.
Craig, have you made any changes to the way the officers' candidates are vetted so to try to prevent some problems that the division's had in the past?
Well, I will tell you that there is civil service, as you know, is a big part of our recruiting process in terms of how officers are vetted. There is an audit, I believe, happening right now in regards to looking at that actual procedure, so I can't speak to the specifics of that, but we are definitely making sure that we're looking at all aspects, whether it's their background, whether it's, different instances that they may have been involved in. But we have to be careful, too. Let me just say that, because what you don't want to do is exclude certain people from being able to be on the department and make it about something that it shouldn't be about. There are officers that passed every background, that passed polygraphs, that did everything, and they're locked up now. I'm just going to say that. So we have to be extremely careful about when you start talking about making changes and vetting, because it can't just be about one or two checklists. So I think a bigger part of it is once they get on the job, once they pass everything, holding them accountable, having some sort of management awareness system. I think supervision and accountability is going to be a huge thing. These officers have to be supervised properly. They have to be trained properly. They have to continuously be audited by the department internally to make sure that they're doing the right thing. So it's not always just about that process in of itself. It's once they get on the job, it goes deeper than that. So I think that we have to look at that, because there are officers that have passed every single scrutiny, every single process, and we're still in the position where we are.
Hi, Lucia Walinches from Ion, Ohio. You mentioned that technology was one of the areas that you wanted to focus on. The city of Cincinnati has an open data portal where they publish a lot of their, calls for service and police officer stops and so on and so forth. Is that going to be also a priority going forward, or do you have something similar in the works?
We're looking at our technology across the board. There is an audit going on right now to determine what's going to work best for the department and the city in regards to our technology. So everything is on the table in regards to what we want to do, but right now we're still in that auditing phase.
Thank you.
You haven't really discussed at all the relationship or the role of the schools. With so many children being criminals and being victims, how are you working with the Columbus City Schools and the suburb schools to make sure these kids are where they're supposed to be and getting the instruction they need?
So we have had meetings with the superintendent of the schools. We know that the school resource officer position was pulled out of the schools recently. We are in the process of trying to figure out what our role can be and what that looks like. We're not there yet, but what I will tell you is that doesn't stop us from being a part of the schools. We've had several calls from different school principals, and we've went to those schools, and we've addressed those issues, and we're going to continue to do that because that's a part of our community. But we're trying to figure out how we can get back in the schools and be active in those particular schools. And I think a big part of that is going to be our youth programs. They've already the superintendent, a lot of principals, they're welcoming the idea of us being able to come in and do these youth programs. So we're going to absolutely do that, but we're also looking at trying to reinstitute officers back in the school. It just has to be something that's amicable to the school system as well as the department.
Can you talk a little bit more about those youth programs? What do you see that looking like?
Well, again, we want to start in the 5th, 6th, and 7th grade. There is a program called City and Trauma Intervention Camp. It's called City Camp. That program is focused on children that have, whether it be economic, we look at areas that are economically challenged, and we also look at children that have behavioral issues. We look at children that have low test scores, and we focus on them, and we try to go in, we pair them up with officers, we mentor, we pair them up with social services, because it can't just be about the child. We look at it from a holistic approach. You could spend 2-3 hours with a child a day, or you could spend 3-4 hours with them a week, but if you're sending them back into the same toxic environment, you haven't done anything. So we have to look at the environment from which they're coming in. Is it something that we can work with the family, whether it's increasing domestic violence counseling, whether it's job training, whether it's helping and assisting with GED, whether it's in a situation where they're in a house where there's no running water, where they're in a situation where their landlord isn't fixing up their homes. So that's where other city services come in. So we're going to be working with them, not just to only address that child and try to increase their self-esteem and help increase their grades and help increase their productivity in school, but also see what's going on in the home that may be contributing to why they're having the issues that they're having in school. So we're going to start that program very shortly. Assistant Chief Potts is extremely instrumental in leading that charge. So that should be coming very soon. And then also we want to look at our 9th graders and 10th graders for a brotherhood sisterhood program. And that's another mentoring program, and that's more geared and focused towards helping them get to the goal of whether it's college, whether it's some sort of job skill training and mentoring. And we're going to be looking at different organizations to be able to assist us with that as well. What we want to do is, because a lot of times kids, they may not necessarily be interested in the academic part, but they're interested in the social activities that, you know, some of these colleges are doing. So if you can get them interested in any way you can to draw them into, hey, you need to go to college, we're going to do that. So we're looking at different programs to be able to bring to the 5th, 6th, 7th grade, but also to our 9th and 10th graders as well. So we're working on that.
That seems like a lot for the police division that you've already said is undermanned to handle. Are you looking to partner with other, are you looking to run that and partner with other groups, or how would that work?
So it is a partnership with the police department and other city entities, as well as, is that my cue? No, other community groups. So it's not just about, so we, a lot of that program, it's a civilian arm to that. So although the police are involved and although we started and we implement, there's a big civilian arm to that, which is why we're going to be reaching out to community members to assist us, because it's the business owners, the residents, the people that are going to be involved, sororities, fraternities. We're looking at everybody to come together and assist us in being able to get these programs off the ground. The biggest part the police department plays in it is having officers that volunteer their time that want to mentor the young men and women. And we won't be just looking at police officers. We're looking at our fire department, too. Chief Happ has been extremely instrumental in pairing with us. So it's first responders as a whole. So the fire department will be involved in that as well. So we want to pair with them and be able to go into schools. And a lot of this is these officers, they volunteer their time. They're willing to give back. And it's not always about on duty.
Next question.
James Pearson. Going all the way back to the academic scholarship, Michelle Alexander's The New Jim Crow, all the way to most recently Angela Davis's Policing the Black Man and everything in between, how can and how does that kind of academic scholarship affect the thinking of what it is to be in our law enforcement process at this time?
That's a question. Okay. I think that we have to be mindful that as a department, I mean, one of the biggest things is bringing awareness to the diversity piece and making sure that everybody is not just trained in diversity, but actually one of the things we do is a program called Serve, Then Protect. You go into the community and you actually give back. You give back through whether it's serving at the soup kitchen, whether it's packaging goods at some of the places where they collect canned goods and things of that nature, because you got to know the community in which you police, and it has to be reflective of what we do. So it's not just when they say diversity, we have to make sure that the officers, it's inclusive. We have to make sure even the officers that don't live in Columbus or the officers that haven't had any exposure to urban living, they have to be exposed to, and it shouldn't be just at a call for service. It should be before that. It should be proactive. So when you talk about scholarships and how that ties in, I think that it's about teaching and learning and getting everybody to understand that it's we have to all be on the same page and learn about that, about it. It's not just us. It's not just minorities. It's not people of color. It's not women, but it's inclusive of everyone.
You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club on 90.5 WCBE. Today's forum was Columbus Police Chief Elaine Bryant. Speaking were Elaine Bryant, Chief of Police for the City of Columbus, and our host, Kelly Lecker, Managing Editor with the Columbus Dispatch. Join us next week as the Columbus Metropolitan Club hosts another community conversation. I'm Doug Buchanan. Thanks for listening.